I'm Andy Bates, part of the team here at KFUO. While you hear me on the air and in podcasts, I'm also part of the team that works behind the scenes to bring you the programs like this that you value. What you hear on the air and in podcasts is just the tip of the iceberg. Listeners like you generously support everything that makes radio and podcasts happen. Administration, cutting-edge technology, software, hosts, producers, and more. You make this happen. Can we count on you to continue this support? KFUO Share-a-thon, now through April 5th, is a great time to show your support and make a gift or make a plan to give for a whole year. Your generosity is important and appreciated, not just by the KFUO team, but by listeners who get to hear and enjoy Christ-centered programs every day. Will you make a gift today? KFUO.org/give. KFUO.org/give. You're listening to The Coffee Hour. I'm Andy Bates.
I'm Sarah Gulseth.
We get to start a new series today. I am elated about this. Oh, wait, I can't be elated. It is Lent.
Yeah. No joy during Lent. Can't do that.
No, there is some joy in Lent because we get to dig into a fantastic series with Dr. Lessing. Looking forward to this as we look at the book of Exodus. Thanks to Concordia University Wisconsin for supporting the Coffee Hour. Find out more about Concordia University Wisconsin at cuw.edu.
Live uncommon.
Joining us today, the Reverend Dr. Reed Lessing. He's professor of theology and ministry. He's the Paul Edwin F. and Esther L. Lesh, Chair of Old Testament Studies and Director of Pre-Seminary Program, Director of Center of Biblical Studies at Concordia University, St. Paul. Dr. Lessing, welcome back to the Coffee Hour.
Good to be here. Thanks for the invite.
Now, you have a number of books, and we have enjoyed talking about some of your books in the past, and today we get to dig into one that's been around for a little bit. This is Deliver Us, God's Rescue Story in Exodus from Concordia Publishing House. This has been out for, what, about 2 years? Is that right?
Yeah.
About 2 years. And it takes a look at Exodus. I appreciate your approach to writing because I feel like in reading your book, I'm having a conversation. I literally, in my head, hear your voice when I'm reading it. That's how I read the text.
I love it.
Because that's how it's written.
Yeah.
I hear you telling the stories in my head, which is fantastic. But today, we actually get to hear you tell the stories. As we take a look at the first few chapters, we're going to take a look at the first four chapters in Deliver Us, which looks at the first six chapters of the book of Exodus. Now, as we dig into this book, what was interesting about Exodus that was so interesting to you that you wanted to write a book about it?
That's a wonderful question. Having taught the book a number of times when I was on the faculty at Concordia Seminary in St. Louis, I began to fall in love with it. Now, it wasn't love at first sight. I don't think a lot of people fall in love with Exodus at first sight. But after a while, I began to appreciate its message, its theology, and really what I began to understand, which is what probably most Old Testament people would tell you, is the book of Exodus is going to be one of the most important books in the Bible. That is to say, the Exodus event in chapter 14 of the book of Exodus provides a template, a pattern, a paradigm for most of the rest of the Bible, all the way through the book of Revelation. I often like to say that the book of Revelation is Exodus on steroids. It's amped up. It's universalized. And so this just really captured my mind and my heart. And having written another book kind of like this on the book of Jeremiah, I thought, well, let's give it another run and see if I can do something like that with Exodus.
So what is unique or interesting about the book of Exodus?
Wow. I would say primarily God's name, God's name. Mm-hmm. So the first couple words in the Hebrew of Exodus 1 verse 1 sounds like this, Ve'ela Shemot. Mm-hmm. Ve'ela means, and these are, and Shemot would be names. So that's a wonderful entry into the book. The book is primarily about names, names like Miriam and Aaron, names like Sifra and Puah, the midwives in chapter 1 of Exodus, names like Moses, mighty Moses, but primarily it's about God's name, right? That is often translated L-O-R-D, in caps in the Old Testament. And probably most of our listeners know that behind L-O-R-D in all caps would be the Hebrew name Yahweh. So what is so fascinating about the book of Exodus is that we have the fullest revelation and definition of Yahweh in the Old Testament. In fact, it's the first time we get his nickname in the so-called Song of the Sea in chapter 15, verse 2, where in the Hebrew it has the word Yah, which is short for Yahweh, which I know this is Lent, but I'll utter it anyway. From Yah, of course, we get Hallelujah, right? Which is simply a Hebrew word that means praise Yah. So to know God's name throughout the Bible, right, is to know God himself.
So this story is about Yahweh primarily. It's mostly about God. How is this often misunderstood when folks read the book of Exodus, thinking about worldviews perhaps other than a Christian biblical worldview?
I would say that probably for a number of Americans, our listeners, when we say the book of Exodus, at least a certain generation of Americans are going to think Charlton Heston and Yul Brynner, the Ten Commandments, directed by Cecil B. DeMille, right? And that certainly is going to be highlighting Moses, played by Charlton Heston, and Pharaoh, played by Yul Brynner. So it is viewed probably by a lot of people, that is the book of Exodus, the way they see it, is more as a horizontal battle, kind of a high noon at the OK Corral. The guy in the white hat is Moses, the guy in the black hat is Pharaoh. And of course, every now and then, you know, we hear the voice of God in that movie. But that's obviously a mistake, because you're missing the vertical, the divine element. Certainly the Steven Spielberg movie, Moses, Prince of Egypt, is going to be an animation, but yet still is going to track mostly on a horizontal human level.
So what is our connection to or place in the Exodus story?
Oh, that's the, I mean, that's what gets me excited. And I miss this for a number of years, having kind of studied the book and taught it. But what we have in chapters 12 and 13 that we'll look at in its appropriate time, a little bit more detail, would be that the Exodus event is going to be something that each subsequent generation can participate in. So I often teach the Bible to people, I say, the Bible's more than information. Everybody kind of nods their head. They get it. The Bible is transformation. People nod their head. Sure, right? Transformation. But then I add a third one, which I need to explain a little bit more. In some parts of the Bible, there's also participation. Participation. The Bible actually, the way it's written, invites us to see ourselves as partaking and being part of the story itself. And that's the inner logic or the way the book of Exodus is built. And so that's why my initial title for this book was simply, this is the book of Exodus. This is my story. This is my song. But that was going to create a lot of copyright issues, right? Because this is my story, this is my song, right? This wonderful line from the 19th century Christian hymn, Blessed Assurance. But this is my story, this is my song, which I do talk about in my introductory chapter in the book we're discussing. This is a wonderful way to understand the book of Exodus. This is my story. And also I've got a song, and really the first song in the Bible comes in Exodus 15, 1 through 18. So Sarah, to answer your question, this whole idea of participation is what makes the book of Exodus so inviting.
So that's our connection. What is Christ's place in the Exodus story?
Oh my, I just can't, I don't have enough time to do that. Just in my own kind of Bible reading regiment, I just finished John's gospel right at the end of John 21. John says, you know, if there were all the books in the world, I couldn't tell you everything that Jesus did, which is a wonderful way to end the fourth gospel. But a lot of the fourth gospel, John's gospel, is going to be built on the book of Exodus. And for many Christians, the book of John, right, is probably their favorite gospel. And then to understand John as drawing deeply from the book of Exodus really gives our time in John more clarity, more insight, more joy as we read through the fourth gospel. Certainly the great I am, right? Exodus chapter 3, verse 14. John is going to make a big deal about this, right? We all know the seven I am statements of Jesus in John's gospel. I am the bread of life, I'm the light of the world, etc. But there are also seven other I am statements of Jesus with no predicate. That is to say, like in John 8, verse 58, before Abraham was, I am. John 8, 59, then the Jews took up stones to stone Jesus. So the I ams, there are 14 distinct I ams in John's gospel, really form the background of a lot of what John is saying. The Passover lamb, already in John 1, verse 29, John the Baptist says, "Behold, the Lamb of God who takes away the sin of the world." How do we know that's the Passover lamb? There are a lot of sacrificial lambs in the Old Testament. That's just Passover lambs. Well, in John's gospel, John is going to use the word Passover 11 times. And John has Jesus dying on the Passover, whereas Matthew, Mark, and Luke don't, which is, you know, a problem for another day. But I would say that this is going to be some of the greatest insight and delight that people have as they go through Exodus and begin to see all of the Christological connections. So one more example would be from Luke's gospel, Luke chapter 9, verse 31, where Jesus is on the Mount of Transfiguration, which we just celebrated with Moses and Elijah, and Luke adds this word Exodus. Jesus was speaking to them about his departure, and in Luke's Greek, the word there is Exodus. So Jesus has an Exodus, and when is that? Well, that's going to be on Easter, his way out. So anyway, those are just a couple examples of the rich Christology that is throughout the book of Exodus. And I just have to say one more, okay? The book ends, all right? So you're reading Exodus, and it's like a thrill a minute, right? Until you get to chapter 25, and it slows down all the way to the end of the book, right? Because we have all this stuff about the tabernacle. Well, the book ends with the tabernacle filled with God's glory. And this is exactly what's going on in John 1:14. The word became flesh and tabernacled among us, to use a better translation of John's Greek verb skeneo. The word became flesh and tabernacled among us, and we've seen his glory, all right? So here would be the ultimate manifestation of God on earth in the person of Jesus.
I'm sure we could have an entire series just about where Christ shows up in Exodus and the Old Testament. Of course, we need to take a quick break. We will be right back. You're listening to The Coffee Hour. I'm Sarah Gulseth.
I'm Andy Bates.
At Concordia University, Wisconsin, we believe you were created for a reason, to use your God-given gifts to help others, to live a life of self-sacrifice in a me-first world, to live a life that's uncommon. Whether you're taking one of 50-plus online programs or learning with us in person on the shores of Lake Michigan, you'll be equipped to make an uncommon impact. Learn more at cuw.edu. Concordia University, Wisconsin. Live uncommon.
Welcome back to The Coffee Hour. I'm Sarah Gulseth.
I'm Andy Bates.
We're talking with the Reverend Dr. Reed Lessing on his book, Deliver Us, God's Rescue Story in the Book of Exodus. We are looking at chapters 1 through 4 today. So much to cover, so many good things in the Book of Exodus. What are some of the different ways we can view or outline the Book of Exodus?
Yeah, in my book, I actually have four different options, and I think all four have some insight as people try and study the book of Exodus. The first one would simply be based on locations. So there's really three locations. Israel's in Egypt, really about the first 13 chapters. Israel's in the wilderness through 13, 17, and to the end of chapter 18. And then the bulk of the book, Israel is on Mount Sinai. So that's pretty simple. The book starts in Egypt. They're in the wilderness for a while, not too long, maybe about 3 months or so. And then they're really park the car at Sinai. A second way to understand the book of Exodus would be to highlight God's gifts, divine benefits. So God gives the gift of salvation. Really, that's the first 18 chapters. The gift of his word. Certainly, we have the 10 words. They're not called commandments, at least in the book of Exodus. The 10 words in Exodus 19 through 24. And then God's gift of the tabernacle, right? His divine presence portending and pointing to Christ, the ultimate tabernacle. So salvation, word, and tabernacle would be another wonderful way to understand the book. Maybe I'll just throw out one more. And I find this pretty compelling, that the Hebrew word serve, either as a noun or a verb, appears 97 times in the book. 97 times. So this is all about, to, kind of quote one of Minnesota's favorite sons, Bob Dylan, right? Yeah, serve somebody. It may be the devil or it may be the Lord, but you got to serve somebody. Those would be some words from a Bob Dylan song. So you got to serve somebody. So really, in the first movement of the book, Israel is serving Pharaoh, and in the second part of the book, Israel is empowered to serve Yahweh, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. So throughout the book, you're got to serve somebody, and Pharaoh kills, steals, and destroys. I mean, he is a wicked and violent and evil master. Yahweh, on the other hand, he liberates and loves, forgives, and leads his people. So those are, three of maybe four ways to understand the book.
And I appreciated this when reading through the book, having different ways of looking at that. I particularly appreciate the gift perspective or the gift outline. I particularly appreciate that. But from your view, why is it helpful to have maybe a couple of different ways of outlining the book or looking at how it's laid out?
Yeah, I would say that any good biblical interpretive method is going to ask a number of questions of the biblical text, right? In fact, I teach a class here called Principles of Biblical Interpretation. And I tell my students, you can kind of boil it all down to just asking questions. You're kind of like a Sherlock Holmes, right? You're trying to uncover things. You're trying to find things out. So to ask the geographical questions in my first outline, I think that's helpful. Where are they at? Egypt, wilderness, Sinai. To ask gospel questions, right? That's really the second outline. Gifts of salvation, word, and tabernacle. And then I'm pretty fond of counting words, and sometimes that will yield some pretty great insight. So a third question you might ask of the book of Exodus is, what are some important words? And serve, slavery, servitude, as I said 97 times, certainly opens up the book as well.
What are some of the familiar or maybe unfamiliar key events in these first six chapters of Exodus? Kind of those toeholds, if that's the word I'm looking for, those places that people will understand as we work through what happens in the beginning of Exodus.
Yeah, so let me just make sure I understand your question. What some of the key events, or are you asking, Sarah, what would be some of the kind of unknown events?
The key events.
Key events. Okay, yeah. Sorry about that. Yeah. Well, so if this is Ve'elah Shemot, right, the first two words in Hebrew, these are the names. What's striking in these first several chapters, we're never told the name of the Pharaoh. All right. And there are several pharaohs in the book, but we're never actually told their names. And this is a bit of a one-off because really throughout the rest of the Old Testament, the Hebrew author is very happy to give us pharaonic names like Pharaoh Necho or Pharaoh Hophra. were told of these pharaohs' names at the times of Ezekiel and Jeremiah. So the fact that we don't have a pharaonic name, pharaoh just means big house in Egyptian. He's just a big house. He's the big dude on the block, all right? Which tells us something, that when you see one pharaoh, you've seen them all. All right. They're not worth finally mentioning because they all have the same agenda. They are anti-Yahweh, anti-life, anti-gospel, anti-restoration people and movements and ideologies. But the names that we do recall would be not only the names that the book begins with. There's a bit of a genealogy there in verses 1 through 7 in Exodus chapter 1. But we also are told the names of these midwives, all right? In chapter 1, verse 5, Siphrah and Puah. So think about it just for a second or three. We don't mention the name of the most powerful person on the planet, but we do mention the names of certainly some of the most lowly people on the planet. Women, for the most part, right, in antiquity, and in the ancient Near East, women, you know, they were looked down upon. They weren't of, right? Unfortunately, they weren't in general looked upon as equal to men. And so we're going to mention women and their Hebrew women and their midwives. So this is an important key to the whole book, that God is going to, this is 1 Peter 5, verse 5, God is going to oppose the proud and give grace to the humble. So we don't want to miss that in chapter 1. Certainly in chapter 2, there's more women. Okay. So we have Siphrah and Puah. Then we have Jochebed, who would be Moses' mother, and Miriam, Moses' older sister, and then one of Pharaoh's daughters, whose names we don't know. And these next three women are going to orchestrate the salvation of Moses, right? So I want to just kind of play out this idea that God is using women, okay, in a very male-dominant society to bring about his purposes, not only for Israel, but we always want to remember that Israel is God's missionary, and God's going to stick with Israel come what may, because it's through Israel that will come the Messiah, Jesus our Lord. That would kind of be some of the highlights in chapters 1 and 2.
Just a few. Next, so many highlights. In our next conversation, we get to take a look at the plagues and Passover.
Yes.
Fun times. with just about 2 or 3 minutes, tell us about how the salvation story begins here in Exodus.
Yeah. So what happens at the end of chapter 2 is God hears the cries of his people who are now under Egyptian servitude and slavery. And it simply says at the end of chapter 2, God saw the sons of Israel and God knew. And that's how it stops. Okay. So what did he know? All right. So chapter 2 ends in Exodus. Well, he knows the pain of his people. All right. So this is a huge idea, because we have this word know in Moses' call in chapter 3, verse 7. How does God know the pain of his people? Because he's in the pain of his people. He's in the burning bush. The messenger of Yahweh is there, who would be the pre-incarnate second person of the Trinity. So this is bigger than big, all right? God comes down. This is what it says in 3, verse 8. He's come down to not only experience the pain of his people, in the burning bush, which stands for Israel's servitude in Egypt, he knows it, and he's going to do something about it through, of all people, Moses.
Oh, we have more to talk about next time we meet next week as we continue our conversation on Deliver Us, God's Rescue Story in Exodus, from Concordia Publishing House and the Reverend Dr. Reed Blessing. He serves as professor of theology and ministry. He's the Paul Edwin F. and Esther L. Lash Chair of Old Testament Studies, as well as the Director of Pre-Seminary Program and Director of the Center for Biblical Studies at Concordia University, St. Paul. In his spare time, he writes really good books like this. Dr. Lessing, thank you so much for being our guest on the Coffee Hour today.
My pleasure. Thank you.
You've been listening to the Coffee Hour. I'm Andy Bates.
I'm Sarah Golseth.
The Coffee Hour with Andy and Sarah is a production of KFUO. To support the Coffee Hour and KFUO Radio, visit KFUO.org. You can also text KFUO to 41444 or send an email to gifts@KFUO.org. And you can call us at 800-844-0524. KFUO. Christ for you, anytime, anywhere.